Hey everyone, welcome back to Cincinnati Zoo Tales. I'm Jenna.
And I'm Mark. Thanks to everyone for tuning in for yet another episode. Jenna, I'm pumped today. We're talking about one of my favorite animals.
I didn't know they were one of your favorites.
Snow leopards. You know I'm a cat person.
Yes.
You know, I love cats. Snow leopards in particular. To talk to us about them and enlighten us about snow leopards and our snow leopards here at the Cincinnati Zoo, we're being joined by Darcy Beckner. Darcy's a member of our Night Hunters and Cat Canyon team. She's a keeper over there. So, Darcy, thanks for joining us and taking the time out of your day to talk to us about snow leopards.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I know you had, like, a pretty full career before coming to Cincinnati, and you worked with a lot of the animals that we currently work with at the Indianapolis Zoo. But tell us where you started before that or how you got to become a zookeeper. Was there anything specific that made you want to be a zookeeper?
Yeah, so I'm from Ohio, and I just grew up having pets, and I have family members that have farms and stuff like that. So I worked with animals and grew up around animals, and I knew I wanted to do something, whether it be vet or zookeeper, but quickly realized that I liked the training and the relationship building that we get with the animals, so I veered a little bit away from the vet side of things. I got my degree here in Ohio, and then I kind of, like most of us have, like I did internships at a various couple zoos. I worked a few years at Birmingham Zoo in Alabama, working with children's zoo animals and then carnivores before going to Indianapolis, where I worked with some hoofstock, some large carnivores, and then about 2 years ago, I made it here.
Has it only been 2 years?
I think it's coming up on maybe two or three.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It feels like longer. You're like, it doesn't feel that long to me, you know? So what was your favorite part about, like, working at either of those zoos? Is there something that you loved that made you want to stay a zookeeper?
Yeah, I think it's just working with the different variety of animals. Like, I've gotten to work with everything, like I said, from, like, hoofstock and giraffes and kudu to working black bears and brown bears to now lots of different type of cats. But I've always been kind of like, I guess you'd call it like a crazy cat lady. So I've always like just like seen myself going back to cats. And that's primarily what I work with now. So
awesome.
I could definitely relate to you on that crazy cat person. I'm right there with you.
How many cats do you have at home?
I have four.
Four, okay.
Yeah. I do have a dog too.
So you work in our Night Hunters Cat Canyon area. Will you tell the listeners a little bit about the different species you have there that you take care of?
Yeah. So we have the Night Hunters building, which is a lot of smaller animals, and we do have them on kind of like a reverse light cycle. So they have their lights on from 11 p.m. to 11 a.m. And then when a lot of the visitors are here is when their lights are off, or we have our red lights on. We have a lot of smaller cats. We have an aardvark, we have fennec foxes, some genets, so a lot of different cool species in there. And then we have our Cat Canyon, which is our snow leopards, our Malayan tiger, and our cougar boys.
Do you have any we always ask this, we're not supposed to have favorites here at the zoo. Do you have a favorite species or like individual that you work with?
I mean, the snow leopards and the palace cats are my top two.
Oh.
Renji, our female snow leopard, is probably my absolute favorite individual. And then we have one palace cat. She's our older lady, Katarina, who is my second special place in my heart.
I love the palace cats. They're like little grumpy,
yep.
Like 10-pound cats. They're adorable.
Yes, oh they have God. The ultimate grumpy face no matter what.
So we are talking about snow leopards specifically today, and you said Renji is your favorite.
Yes.
So will you tell us about Renji and her personality, her age? Why is she your favorite?
Yeah, Renji just actually turned 13 in January. She was born at the Chattanooga Zoo and came to the Cincinnati Zoo when she was about 1 year old to be placed with Nubo, our male. She is just my favorite because she's just such a sassy lady.
So you like grumpy animals.
Grumpy or like she's also just, she's very, very smart and like also kind of stubborn.
Okay.
And as someone who really likes training and everything like that, like I love like the challenge.
Oh, yeah. Maybe grumpy's the wrong word, challenging
yeah.
or smart. And,
yeah.
Has
she's definitely a lot more keen to like what's going on or things like that, like if the vet is coming or anything like that. But she's also just like really, really sweet and a lot of fun to work with. So she's just been fun to like work with and like kind of work through her hurdles and her stubbornness and everything like that.
And then tell us about our other snow leopard.
Nuba. That would be Nubo, our male. He is 12. He will actually be 13 this summer. And he was born at Cape May Zoo and came here when he, I think, was just under a year old. Okay. So they've been together most of their life. And he is a little more of our, I don't know how I'd say it. He's a little more laid back. He's extremely food motivated, so as long as you have food, he's kind of just willing to do whatever you want. He doesn't mind, like, if the vets are there, strangers are there, anything like that. As long as you have food, he is a happy boy.
That's always a bonus. For any visitors that might be coming and seeing our snow leopard habitat, are there any easy, like, identifiers or ways that you can tell the two apart, Nubo and Renji?
Yeah, there's some really easy ones. Nubo's actually has an all-black nose. And Renji has a pink nose. That's probably the easiest ones. They are a little bit of a size difference. Nubo's a little bit bigger than Renji is, and he's got a little bit of wider, broader head. But then the other really kind of easy one, if they're up moving around and everything, is Renji has a really distinctive bend in her tail. And so her tail kind of almost goes in an L shape, whereas his is very, very straight.
Interesting.
The first time I went to with my now wife and we saw the snow leopards, I started in Night Hunters actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, way back. This has been, 8 years ago now. I started in the Night Hunters habitat. The first time we went down there and I showed her the snow leopards, I was like, yeah, Renji's just the prettier one. Like,
Renji looks so gorgeous. She does. She has a really, really pretty and photogenic face. We actually have some members that'll be like, she's the prettiest cat in the zoo and stuff really, like that.
I'm not going to say that.
Is it common or is it always the females have pink noses and males have black noses with snow leopards?
No, it's just different individuals. I think actually Nubo's mom had an all black nose too. So it just happens to be like a distinguishing characteristic of them.
Cool.
Okay, so we know that Renji is gorgeous. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about what snow leopards look like and talk about their coat and where they're from a little bit?
So snow leopards are from Asia, and they are in about 12 countries over in Asia and in the Rocky Mountains, primarily kind of like in the Himalaya mountain range. 60% of their population actually is in China, but they do span over about 12 different countries. Like you said, they have like a really dense, thick, spotted coat, and that white grayish coloration, which helps them with the snow, and camouflaging in with the snow. I feel like when you look at Nubo, you can see it really well, but they have like longer back limbs, and kind of shorter, stockier front limbs. And that's for them like leaping and climbing on the rocks and the mountains. They can run kind of short bursts fast, but they're actually known for, being able to jump longer distances. They can jump up to like 30 feet due to their long limbs, and everything like that. They obviously, I feel like one of the things people always notice is like how long their tail is. Their tail is, can be the length of their entire body. And it helps them also like balance on the rocks, and they use it for warmth and can like wrap their face.
Like a little scarf.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Yes. And then they, I'm trying to think now, they have a like larger front feet, that are kept from sinking in the snow.
Okay.
So they're really adapted for elevation and colder climate, and getting around on those rocky mountains.
Yeah, their paws are almost like snowshoes, right?
Yes.
For their size, they're gigantic relative to their size. Like, I feel like their paws are just as big as the lion's almost. And
I don't think I've ever really been like super up close or like spent time around them, but I feel like I know what you're talking about, and they have like all the fur underneath, right? But if you said they don't, like, run very fast for long periods, how are they hunting typically?
So a lot of the times they'll kind of, like, run prey down the mountain. I've seen, like, videos and stuff where a lot of the times, like, so they hunt wild sheep and goat species.
Okay.
And they can also hunt, like, birds and hare and stuff like that. But they'll chase them kind of down the mountain. And I think a lot of the times they'll, like, either wait until, like, a sheep, like, kind of tumbles or something like that. But they just use that balance and their agileness on the mountains to just, like, chase prey down.
Yeah, I've seen some videos. It is wild. Like,
yeah,
they're not going across the mountain. They're going down the mountain. So, like, the elevation change while they hunt is...
Yeah.
Is bonkers. It's crazy to see.
It is really cool to watch.
At the lower point of view on that, like you're at on the mountain and they're coming towards you. Like, oh my gosh. I had no idea that's how they hunted. It makes a ton of sense because how else would you chase down your prey on the mountain?
Yeah.
And so you mentioned in the wild they're going to be eating like a lot of wild sheep, wild goat, ibex, that kind of stuff. What are they going to be eating here at the zoo?
So here we feed them like a beef diet, and then we rotate in some various bones, and then some various like frozen prey items. They do get like rats. Nubo actually really likes rats. Renji does not. She does not like rats. But primarily it's bones and the like beef diet that we get here that's fortified for them.
Do they have a favorite food item? Sounds like rats maybe for Nubo, but
he does like rats. Renji actually another like enrichment kind of thing that she likes. She likes hard boiled eggs. Whereas Nubo does not. So that's another, like, flip on the other side for them. They get quail, like, that we've thawed as treats. And then they do get a goat day where we give them, like, a piece of goat, kind of like their natural diet. And they do really like that day as well.
Oh, that's funny. John likes guinea pigs and Imani does not. The girls are like, that's gross.
Yeah.
I'm not going for that.
I don't blame them, yeah.
So you've mentioned that you love doing training, and I know that's one of the most important parts of our jobs with animals if we want to, like, get a, like, up-close look at them without sending them to the vet or putting them under anesthesia, and I've heard you've had some really good luck with training our snow leopards.
We have, yeah.
So tell us about what you've been training.
So they know some basic behaviors that help us, like you said, with vet care and us just keeping a good eye on them. They know how to target so that we can, like, move them around if we need to, and they know, they both know sit and down to, like, change their body positions. But recently, and they're both trained to voluntarily get on a scale so that we can get at least monthly weights on them and monitor their body condition, especially since they do like the seasonal changes and, like, the cold and stuff. It allows us to make sure they're at a good weight going into the winter, and then back into the summer and things like that. But recently we've been doing a lot of work with injection and blood draw training. So they're both actually now trained for voluntary injections. So they come over to the fence and they'll line up and they'll give us their shoulder and their hip, and we can give them voluntary vaccines or injections for anesthetic procedures. And then we recently were able to get voluntary blood draws on both of them, which was the first time that that's ever happened.
That's awesome. Congrats. Yes. Yeah, that's awesome.
So we have a space where we can pull their tail out from under, like, our fencing and our behind the scenes area. And they have gotten really comfortable with our vet techs coming down, and they've shaved a little spot. So if you actually come to the zoo, you might be able to see that they each have, like, a notch shaved out of their tail. But they each have a little spot where they're shaved where we've been able to draw blood from.
That's awesome. Yeah, congrats. And it's different. We don't have to shave the lions to do their tail. Yeah. That's how much fur a snow leopard has.
Yeah, a lot of fur to get through.
Yeah, I bet. So how long did it take you from, like, start to end of starting, like, the blood draw training, for example, to, like, actually get blood?
Nubo went a little faster than Renji. Like I said, he's really food motivated. So as long as someone was feeding him, or we used, like, frozen blood cubes, he was pretty preoccupied and laid there and let the vet techs do whatever they needed to do. Renji took a little more time. We kind of had to baby step with her with using, like, a fake needle and then, like, just a poke with the needle and then, like, actually trying to find a vein and stuff. But once she learned that, like, nothing was, like, nothing bad or anything was going to happen, and, like, she kind of learned each step, she got over it pretty quick. So I would say it took maybe somewhere 6 months.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
That's not that long at all. Like, that's great progress, honestly. Yeah. Like, some of these behaviors with our animals, like, I mean, we talk about what we do with the giraffe and the hoof care over there, but that's years in progress, right? So 6 months is really great time. That's awesome.
Well, they're good. They're good kids to work with.
Do you have anything else you guys are starting to work on for training now that you've accomplished that?
We're currently working with trying to train like an open mouth behavior of some sort. Mm-hmm. Renji currently does, I kind of like captured a little like growl from her, which allows you to see all of her front teeth, but she's not quite opening her mouth yet. Okay. So you can see the back teeth. But that's another one on our priority. And then Paul Presents. That's another one we're working on. Another behavior I forgot that Renji knows is she's also ultrasound trained.
Oh, yeah.
So we work with our crew department here at the zoo, and she does voluntary ultrasounds for them as well.
So they were brought here for the hopes of breeding, correct, in the past? And unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet, and she's likely at an age where we won't see that happen. Is that correct?
Yeah, unfortunately, she's getting... Well, both of them are getting into, like, their older years, so it's not likely that we will have cubs here with them.
I guess ultrasounds, though, can be used for many different... to check organs and such. So are there anything, like, anything specific you guys are looking for? Or in the past, was it always for reproductive reasons?
It was mainly for reproductive reasons. But recently, we had a time period where we suspected that she maybe had, like, a UTI or urinary tract infection. And we were able to see, like, to try to see her bladder that way and see if there was anything. But yeah, it's also just good for monitoring organs and everything else. They can try to see her kidneys and things like that.
Is this done on, like, basically the steel mesh, like, chain link fences? Or where are you doing the ultrasound probe if it's on her belly?
It is. So she's just standing up on that. And we have, like, an extender attached to an ultrasound probe. And they are able to stick it through. She does really, really well. They're able to spray her with alcohol and apply the ultrasound jelly. And she just kind of cleans herself up when they're all done. but we just use an extender and are able to touch her stomach through the fence.
It's pretty impressive, one, to get through all that fur, but also that she'll, like, kind of be in, like, a standing or sit position to do that. Is it standing all the way, or is she, like, on her haunches?
Oh, no, she's all the way
all
up.
All the way up for that long. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
That's awesome. You mentioned that Nuba and Renji are starting to get a little bit older. Would you one more time just repeat their ages and then kind of say what their lifespan would be in the wild versus in human care?
Yeah, of course. So Renji just turned 13. She was born in January, and Nuba was 12, but almost 13. He'll turn 13 in May.
Okay.
And so their wild age would be about 10 to 12. So they would be at the top of their, like, wild life expectancy. But in zoos, they've lived up to lower 20s. So we still have many years with these guys, with how they are in human care.
I think it's interesting. They get along really well, correct? But typically they would be solitary in the wild.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's just, like, their laid-back personalities, or is it common in zoos that snow leopards live together, or is it just these two?
It kind of depends on the pair. I know a lot of zoos that do have to have theirs by themselves, and they do kind of, like, rotate them and have them in a solitary manner, and they would be solitary in the wild. They would live by themselves and then just come together during breeding season, and then the female would go off and raise the young by herself. But our two, I don't know if it's just because they've grown up with each other, but they really, really like each other. We separate them to feed, but that's kind of the only time that they're by themselves. But sometimes even if they're separated inside with, like, no visual access, we can hear them, like, calling to each other and talking and stuff. So they really prefer to be together. A lot of the times I feel like when people come, they're, like, cuddled up together in their cave sleeping and...
So it's always precious to see that. Obviously, you mentioned these guys are going to be found in mountainous ranges. It's going to be really cold. What are some of, like, the challenges that you guys face here? Obviously, in Cincinnati, it's going to get pretty warm during the summertime. What kind of challenges does that present, and how do you guys overcome it?
Oh, yeah. So, they obviously, like you said, they prefer the colder weather. So, on those days when it's really, really cold and your guys' animals are living inside, a lot of the times the snows are just outside having a good time. Renji really likes snow, and she rolls around, and she'll roll down the hill in it. Somersaults. But in the summer, like you said, we do have some challenges with it being warm. The exhibit does have air conditioning vents. So their one cave and their window area has air conditioning vents that blow out onto the exhibit. And then they have the caves that typically stay a little cooler. But if it is too warm, we will give them access. So if you come on a day when it's like really, really hot outside, they may be in their behind the scenes holding area. And that area is also air conditioned for them.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. Like if it's too cold, our animals get access. But if it's too hot, the snow leopards get access. Yes. And the choice.
It's flipped, yeah.
Can they handle like 80s or 90s? What is the temp cutoff that is like too warm for them?
Typically around like 85 to 90. Okay. We make sure that they have access. But even still, like sometimes when it's warm, you'll still see them sitting outside. One thing that we get asked is if they like the water and they use the water to cool off, and they do not. They are not a fan of the water. Whereas like our tigers will sit in the pools when it gets really warm to cool down. The snow leopards are not a fan of water.
It's probably not smart to get wet in the wild, right? Like it would be really cold then, and I don't know how much access to water they have. Actually, that's a question I now have. Like, do you know if they drink water in the wild? Is there, like, fresh water in the mountains? Is it...
I believe they, like, find, like, resources of fresh water somewhere.
I don't know if it's more from, like, the food they eat or...
Like a running stream, maybe, something like that.
I guess that's a good question. I don't know how cold it really is up there, but I imagine very cold.
Yeah, that's a good... I don't have to answer this one. I'm stumped.
So... our snow leopards here live together, but in the wild they're solitary, and their numbers are a little bit, like... unknown, correct? But they're likely endangered, is that correct?
So they're actually listed as vulnerable.
Okay, so not
But they are very elusive in the wild, and because of the mountain ranges and how solitary and elusive they are, there's actually not a lot typically known about them, or at least until recently. Mm-hmm. So it's actually really hard for scientists and researchers and stuff to find out what their numbers are. It's estimated, the last I looked, that they think there's between 3,500 and 7,000, but they're not exactly sure how many there are because of stuff. There are projects that, like, are using radio collars and, like, field traps, cameras, and things like that to try to get an idea on stuff. But they definitely are, and they're crepuscular, so they hunt at dusk and dawn, so that also they're kind of out in the times when it would be, like, maybe a little dark and things like that, so... Yeah. One of their nicknames is Ghost of the Mountain because of how, like, elusive and how little was known about them.
Yeah. Do you guys still see more activity from Nubo and Renji, like, at mornings and evenings? Like, or are they pretty much adjusted to your schedule?
They typically are also sort of like that as well. Okay. Like, they'll be more active in the mornings and things like that. And then when you come by in the afternoon, they tend to kind of hunker down in their cave and slept. But then by the late afternoon, when they would maybe be getting their afternoon feeding, they're kind of up and about again. So kind of both.
They should come either first thing or last thing when they visit. I know a lot of people ask about when to see certain animals, and a lot of them are on our schedule where they're getting fed usually like first thing in the morning and the late afternoon, so they're usually more active for that reason, but a lot of animals are also crepuscular and just active at those times, usually. So it's one of those things where they're hard to find. They're very elusive, and it gives me hope that maybe there's, like, way more than we think. And also because there's got to be less, like, human conflict with them, right? Or what are their biggest threats in the wild?
So they have a couple. One of them is climate change. Since they do live in, like, the colder regions and the mountains and things like that, the climate change is a part of it. But human conflict actually is one of their largest problems. So one of their conflicts is loss of their prey, and part of that is due to human encroachment like farm livestock of like the native people and everything. The livestock fields are taking up kind of the habitat of the wild sheep and goats that they would hunt. And then in addition to that, there's just, like, the snow leopards' habitat loss in general by building new roads, building railways.
Man, I was really hoping they were safe up in the mountains, you know, like, less people moving in.
With the mountains, though, there's also comes, like, mining. So there's a lot of mining for oil and gems and things like that, which is what is affecting the mountains. Okay. But then also with expanding communities, there is the loss of their prey, their natural prey. There's the human-wildlife conflict of sometimes the snow leopard will choose to prey on the livestock of a farmer. Mm. And then unfortunately, the farmers and the communities will use retaliatory like punishment onto the snow leopards.
Yeah. And I feel like we talk about it a lot with other animals, and correct me if I'm wrong, Darcy, but I feel like fragmentation is also a big issue, right? Like, you know, as the habitat gets split in two, now there's a range of mountains on one side and a range of mountains on the other, and there's no more connections between those two spaces, so snow leopards can't move between the area to breed. Yeah.
Yeah, and they actually do travel a lot, and they move their home ranges, so they don't stay in, like, a home range for their entire life. They migrate them. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, that's a part of that, too.
What, is their home range large?
Are they it can be really large, okay. Yeah. They can travel, like, it can be up to, I think, like, 1,000? Like square kilometers.
Okay, I thought so, I heard that.
Or even larger. Yeah.
That they have large home ranges. Mm. Huh, that would make it even harder to come across another one, too.
Yeah.
There. What causes the migration? Do you know? Like, are they just following food sources? Yes. Or, okay.
Yeah, they just move with food availability.
Okay. Man, so they do have a lot of the same issues that animals that aren't living in the mountains have.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
I know you would hope that they're kind of immune to it because their habitat isn't necessarily like desirable for human lifestyle, but there's still all kinds of threats they face, unfortunately.
Yeah, but luckily there's a lot of groups. There's groups like the Snow Leopard Trust, and the zoo works with the Snow Leopard Conservancy.
I thought so.
Yeah, so we the Cincinnati Zoo works with the Snow Leopard Conservancy, and these are groups that are going over there and helping, like, directly with the snow leopard population. The Snow Leopard Conservancy works in, I think, 7 of the 12 countries, and they go over there and work directly to do more research on snow leopards just in general so that they can find out more information on how they live, how they breed, how they're moving, things like that. But then they also work with the locals to educate them more on the importance of the snow leopard in the ecosystem, and things like building stronger corrals for their livestock to help prevent them from predation risks and everything like that. And then they also work to, tourism is becoming more popular. And so they work to build places for the tourists to come. And then that increase of finances helps the local communities and kind of offsets if there were to be any kind of predation from snow leopards. So those groups are doing a lot to help the snow leopard numbers and to help bring awareness to those communities on how important they are.
That's good. That's
amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. You wouldn't think of, at least I wouldn't think of, like, ecotourism as a big benefit for snow leopards. Like, I feel like that's got to be I would love to see a snow leopard in the wild one day, but that's got to be a tough trip to make, right? Like, I'm glad they're able to utilize that.
Yeah, definitely.
I have a quick question. So I know back in the day, this is when I was there, so we're talking 8 or 9 years ago, they used to do like a once a week operant conditioning session at the viewing glass area. Is that something that we still do for visitors?
So we're not doing it right now.
Okay.
It actually got stopped during COVID.
Okay.
Unfortunately, snow leopards, they found, were one of the most susceptible to getting the COVID virus. So they are really at risk by us. We still wear masks with them. And they are actually voluntarily vaccinated for COVID as well.
Oh, awesome.
But just with everything, we haven't started that back up yet. It would be great if we could, because, I would love to do.
But might not be worth the risk. Yeah. I remember reading those stories through COVID where different animals in zoos were getting it. And snow leopards, for whatever reason, did seem to be one that got hit pretty hard.
Yeah, they did. There was quite a few facilities that had loss due to it. So, not quite sure why they are so much more susceptible than the other large felines, but...
And there aren't many in zoos. Do you know how many, zoos have them, or how many
are here? There's 117 and 53 AZA zoos.
Okay.
Okay.
So...
It's actually more than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Hmm. Interesting. Do you have anything else?
I don't think so. Do you have any trivia today?
I do have trivia.
Yeah?
Yeah. Darcy, if you're up for it.
Sure. Before we do trivia, do you have anything else you wanted to tell us about snow leopards? Did we miss any of the good stuff?
don't think so.
Okay, that's fine.
I think we're good. Just wanted to double check. Yeah. I do have some trivia for you guys, though. I've got four questions here. Obviously, talking snow leopards today. That's what the trivia is about. So this one was news to me when I found this out. What cat species is the snow leopard's closest living relative?
What cat species?
Yeah, what cat species is closest living relative to snow leopards?
I'm going to guess something weird, like a lynx.
A lynx? Oh, okay.
That actually makes sense to me. I have no idea. Bobcat,
you're both off on this one. I personally was just thinking, like, it's got to be a leopard, right? Like, that's why it's called a snow leopard.
Yeah.
And they've kind of got, like, the rosette patterning. But it's not. It's actually tigers.
No way.
Tigers are the closest living relatives. Wow. Yeah, that was news to me. I was, like, interested in that
they
one.
They seem so different to me.
I know. Yeah. I guess
tigers are kind of, like, aside from looks, they have very different ranges and, mm-hmm.
yeah.
I don't know.
They're both, like, from that kind of Asian descent. Yeah, that area. But still news to me.
Well, actually, recently, snow leopards were reclassified as big cats. So they are the smallest of the big cats. And I feel like when people typically think of big cats, they think of the ability to roar.
Yes, like I thought cheetahs weren't big cats because they can't roar, but that's not necessarily it these days.
No,
but
that is not.
We don't really know why.
No,
we need to look this up, folks.
So,
what sounds do they make?
So they make a yowl sound or like a mewing sound, and then they make a chuff, which is like an exhale of air sound, which tigers actually do. But they actually can purr like cheetahs. But they cannot roar.
Okay, so we all need to do some research and find out what classifies a cat as a big cat.
I was gonna say, I feel like part of the, this could be off base, but I feel like based on like what my kind of research and stuff is like part of these reclassifications are done as they like sequence genomes. So it's all based on genetics. Cause like that's why historically they always thought the snow leopard was closest related to the leopard based on morphology, like its body.
That makes sense.
As they got the genetics back, they realized it was genetically closest to a tiger. So that could be why they reclassified to a big cat. It could be their genetics, but I don't know that 100%.
Yeah,
that's just my theory. Yeah.
That's interesting. It makes sense. And then I wonder like what genes are they seeing that like they decide is a big cat gene, right?
We need to have someone on crew to explain this to us.
You guys work with crew a lot, right, with the snow leopards? Are you used to when you're doing ultrasounds?
Yeah, we do.
Is there which scientists do you typically
work with? Most with Lindsay.
Okay.
Lindsay and Elizabeth.
Okay, yeah, great. Yeah, we haven't talked to Elizabeth yet, so maybe we'll bring her on.
Yeah, I always love having the crew people on. They teach so much to me and Jenna. We're always fascinated.
Just blown away. Okay, interesting. Right. I learned something new.
Moving on to the next one. Darcy, you're going to have to hold off on answering this one because you actually answered this while we were talking about
this
snow leopards.
How well was Jenna listening?
So this is how, was Jenna paying attention? We'll see. So how large is a snow leopard's home range? And you can say either square kilometers or square miles. I've got both numbers.
Okay, I did ask this question.
You did.
So let's hope I listened well. And it's a giant amount. It's like 1,000 square kilometers.
1,000. You got it. You got it.
Yes.
Jenna's always astutely paying attention during our conversations. I love it. So 1,000 square kilometers.
Paying attention. Well, it is some. But like remembering.
Remembering.
I have a bad memory, right? Yeah. We'll just go with that. But I got it.
And numbers aren't your thing.
Numbers aren't your thing. Clearly not my thing. I got it though, right?
Yes.
But about 1,000 square kilometers, Darcy had it on the money, or like that kind of converts to around 400 square miles. So this is just a huge space. For comparison, the area of Cincinnati, so not like the tri-state area, but just Cincinnati itself, is about 80 square miles.
Wow.
So their home range is about 4 times the size of Cincinnati, roughly.
That's incredible.
Which is wild.
Yeah. And there's only one snow leopard?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think, Darcy, you would probably know more than I do, but, like, I think it's just such a large area because that's how sparse their prey items are. Like, they have to have a bigger range so that they can find prey in the area. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Make it hard to find each other and
mm-hmm.
to have that many living. I guess I really don't understand geography or numbers, so I'm like, how is there enough space for all of these?
Yeah.
But
your one exception where more than one would be, like, Well, the two exceptions would be, like, crossing to breed or, like, happened to crossing when, like, looking for prey and stuff. But the, like, a mom with cubs.
Okay.
So she would have cubs with her for about 2 years.
Oh, wow.
So.
That's, okay.
Okay. Do you know how, what their normal litter size is?
Like, it's normally, ready? Like, 2 to 3, but they can have 4 to 5. And they have about a 90 to 110-day gestation. So approximately 3 months.
Okay.
Wow, can you imagine having to hunt for 5 cubs on your own in that sort of environment?
Yeah.
Wow, that would be tough. Do you know how big the cubs are when they're born?
I think just a small, like, couple maybe not even a couple pounds.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did see when I was, like, looking up some things that they typically, if they get a large prey item, they will eat on that for about 8 days.
Okay.
And so they'll go hunt about maybe 8 days for a larger item.
Do you know if the cubs, like, stay put while the mom hunts, or do they follow along? Like, she
that I'm
them?
Not sure, but okay. I would assume, especially with the terrain and everything and how small they would be, that she probably leaves them behind.
Can
and
you
probably
then
brings
she has to drag it back up? Like, if they're following them down the mountain, then she has to, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And then how much do adult snow leopards weigh?
They can range from about, like, 55 to 110, so it's kind of a wider range. Ours personally here at Cincinnati, Renji currently weighs about 70 pounds and Nuba weighs about 80.
I feel like their fur must make them look stockier because I would have guessed over 100 pounds for sure.
Yeah, they're a lot smaller. When I had never worked snow leopards until I started working here, and that was actually the first time that I got to see them up close, I was surprised by how short and stocky they were. I expected them to be a lot taller and larger than they really were.
I'm ashamed to say, don't like ever get really good looks at them. I'm gonna have to make that a priority.
You'll have to come on over.
I think stocky is a good description because they're like short but they're kind of thick and muscular.
Yeah,
like,
they have really muscular bodies.
Yeah, and that's why I would have thought they would be more what they would weigh more, but okay, not that big actually. 55 pounds.
All right, so now we're talking about how big their home ranges are, and Darcy's elaborate on how elusive snow leopards can be in the wild. So, Rodney Jackson, who was a biologist and conservationist, he conducted a research trip, the first known trip where they tried to radio collar snow leopards in the 80s. This was like, which isn't that long ago, and this is when they're trying to get some of the first information available on snow leopards. They wanted to radio collar snow leopards to find out their home range size, where they're going, where they're hunting, all that kind of stuff. So he spent 4 years in Nepal trying to radio collar snow leopards.
Oh my gosh.
How many snow leopards did they radio collar in 4 years?
I'm going to shoot really low and say like 2, but I do not know the answer to this.
I was
going to
say 1.
1. You guys are really close. Like, it's a tiny number. They collared 5.
Wow.
5 snow leopards in four years.
I love how you give us so much credit.
Could you imagine? You spend 4 years in the mountains looking for snow leopards and you find 5?
Oh my gosh. But that home range is gigantic.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how well they camouflage if they're sitting still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And it's just always crazy to me, like, how little we know about some of these animals.
Yeah. Right?
Like, snow leopards are one of those that there's still so much for us to learn about and discover. And I think we're getting a little bit better now that we can use, like, remote tracking and camera traps and all that kind of stuff. But back in the 70s and 80s, they didn't have that stuff.
Yeah. Like, we have a lot more technology now that allows us to get up in those areas.
Yeah,
definitely. All right, moving on to our last question here. If you've ever seen a great animated film, Kung Fu Panda, the villain is a snow leopard. I don't like snow leopards painted as villains, but the villain is a snow leopard. Do you guys know the villain's name? Have you seen this movie?
No.
I actually, one of my coworkers just teased me about this earlier today,
no way.
And I do not remember what she said its name was.
Is it like something that we could put together? Like,
Jenna, you've got a toddler. You've never showed him?
No.
Kung Fu Panda?
I haven't.
Oh man, it's a good one.
Is it?
It's a good one.
You know, can we go off on a tangent for a second? Animals being painted as villains is so hard for me with toddlers at home because...
That's fair,
I feel like my career, I try and explain that like... Snakes aren't bad. Hyenas aren't bad. And, like, one of our favorite movies is The Lion King. And in different, like, shows and things, hyenas are always...
The villains.
The villain.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to explain to a 3-year-old that they're predators, yes, but they're not bad. And they're not mean. And I used to say this when I was, like, an interpreter for Wild Encounters. And somebody would be like, snakes are mean. I'd be like, do they steal your lunch money or call you names? Like, that's mean. Like, eating to stay alive isn't mean. But anyways, that was my tangent. Like, snow leopards shouldn't be painted as villains. They're just trying to survive.
No, that's a fair point. In this particular movie, is not really trying to survive. He's a kung fu master, but I guess you'll just have to see it.
Is he like a bully kung fu master?
He is, he is.
Okay.
I guess they're basing it off of that great mountain agility.
That's what it is, yeah. The agility and the strength, yeah. That's
is there
is.
Any way we could just like
I don't
guess
think, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't think you're going to get it, but it's Tao Long.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. But I would recommend Kung Fu Panda. It's a good one, for
okay.
sure.
Okay. Good to know.
Besides the fact that the snow leopard's a villain, like you said.
Okay, well, if you don't have any other snow leopard stuff you wanted to talk about, I will ask the final question. What can I do? Is there anything you do at home or anything you suggest to others to, you know, help either snow leopards in the wild or just good for the earth in general?
Yeah. So one thing that... like I do with either my friends or my husband, he actually works here too. So we do this a lot, is we carpool, as much as we can. So we carpool to work and then I carpool with my friends if we're going places. And that just helps reduce carbon emissions and the carbon footprint, which overall helps our environment and our atmosphere and that climate change, which is one of the snow leopards like current threats. So
that's a good one. It's easy enough to do, especially if you're, you know, living close to friends that, you know, you could travel with to the movies or whatever you're doing, but work, especially if you're doing that 5 days a week, could make a big difference.
Yes, it definitely does.
Definitely. And it's another one of the, we touch on these in a lot of our what can I do's, but like, not only is it good for the environment, but it's also financially good too, right? You're saving money on gas. Gas is expensive right now. It just makes sense. It's something that's really simple, but really meaningful.
Yeah.
I love that one. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And you'll have to come over and see them up close.
Yes, I need to make that
definitely
happen.
Definitely taking you up on that. Yeah.
We say that we need to get out a lot more.
I know. We are getting to the end of winter now, though. I hope we get maybe one more snow for Renji to roll down the hill.
Yes.
We'll have to see.
It's very cute.
But we just had a few weeks of very, very cold temperatures. Were they loving that? Did you see, like, activity levels change? Or
so they were more active, and even with, like, the days when it was really cold and we had, like, negative wind chills, we would give them access to come inside the building if they wanted, and they would be outside laying in the cold weather. We gave them one of their favorite things is like big floofy straw bed. And so they would just like nestle down in their straw bed and sleep in the cold. So they were having a good time.
Oh, I know we were just about to end the episode, but we didn't hear about any of their favorite enrichment. Do they have any?
So they do. They're very scent oriented. So some of their favorite things are various spices or perfumes.
Okay.
Nuba really likes Dolly Parton perfume.
Shout out to Dolly.
So he'll like rub his face on like the rocks or the toys that we put it on. I touched on a little bit. Renji really likes hard-boiled eggs, and that's an enrichment thing for them. And then one of their favorite things that we tried with them this past summer that we actually got from you guys that we found out that they loved was ostrich eggs.
I'm going to send you home with some. I mean, back to work with some.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, they loved them. We put them out there, and we found them the next day just completely smashed.
Oh my gosh.
And then we have cameras on the exhibit, so we were able to look back, and we saw, like, Renji and Nubo just, like, throwing them around and, like, batting them around like little cats.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it was very cute.
Were they whole eggs, or did we...
They were hollowed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They still liked them, though?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Yes, awesome. They were everywhere.
That's so fun.
That's awesome.
All right, I think I'm done with questions now.
Yeah,
do you have anything else?
I got nothing else, no.
Well, thank you for your
time. Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you.
For sure. Shout out to Nubo. Shout out to Renji. Shout out to Darcy and all the amazing training. Your whole team, I'm sure. Obviously, like we know, it takes a village to do this kind of stuff.
Yes, it does.
So. Shout out to your team for your amazing training. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you to all you listeners out there for joining us for another episode. Until next time.
Have a good week.